Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Before I introduce my special guests today, I have an announcement to make about the show itself. Kevin is taking an hiatus from radio, and I am unable to carry on the dynamic duo without him. How could that be possible? So I will be in Washington all next week, and fortunately Morgan Reynolds will be guest hosting on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Kevin's shows for the 7th, the 10th, and the 14th will be reruns. For the 14th, the 17th, and the 21st will be reruns, and then the show will end on the 21st. I want to give special thanks now to the GCN network and staff, Brady, Jared, Donovan, for example, who have helped me get on the air and maintain connections with callers. Ted Anderson, who is the owner of GCN and who's been very professional in his dealings with me, and to say how much I've enjoyed the privilege of hosting this show. I'll repeat this announcement at the end and offer a couple of additional reflections, but I wanted to make sure I said it now in case my special guest and I get wound up in our discussion and I don't have time to say the things I've just said at that point. My guest today is a composer, a musician, an expert in digital processing. It gives me special pleasure for him to be my last guest as a host of this show. Ace Baker, welcome back to the Dynamic Duo.
Hi, Jim. Gosh, that's so sad. Dynamic Duo is winding down to an end.
We had a great run, Ace, and you were an important part of it.
All right. Well, so here we are.
Listen, you have been doing so much good work on this business of video fakery that I thought it would be a really good idea to have you back to talk about it some more. And in particular, you have established a very impressive argument, it seems to me, about the way in which it was all done. So I thought today would be a wonderful occasion for us to pursue the points that you've established in your research and subject them to public discussion and scrutiny. Why don't you give us an overall view of your take about 9/11 in relation to the video record?
Well, I think that it's, I don't think, I know that it is provable by understanding both the capabilities of video compositing and also the limitations and the potential pitfalls of video compositing. It is provable that the 9/11 airplane videos are fake. They are, in fact, video composites. They represent basically real, authentic footage, video footage that was shot. But each one that shows an airplane has had an airplane image inserted into it. And again, by understanding both the capabilities and the limitations, I think it's possible to not only prove that the airplane videos are video composites, but it's also possible to prove that by understanding the limitations of video compositing, it's possible to prove that there was no flying object of any kind that struck either of the two twin towers on 9/11.
Well, I think that's fascinating, and I'm happy to say that in the second book I'm editing for Scholars on 9/11, which will be entitled The 9/11 Controversies, you have contributed what I think is quite a brilliant chapter. And, of course, I can't imagine anything more controversial in relation to 9/11 research than the theses that you explore in relation to video fakery and planes or no planes at the World Trade Center. So I'm really delighted that I have that chapter for the book, Ace, and I'm very impressed with the meticulous way in which you've gone about your research. I'm going to guess that you have some videos or whatever on your website you might like us to review. But otherwise, you know, you have some 22 data points that we can discuss that become extremely important in sorting these issues out.
Right. I want to just point out before we get into that, of course we can get into that and start going through those, but I want to just point out sort of what my process has been for about 3 years since I got into trying to study 9/11, and unlike others that I know, it's been very, very important to me at every stage. Anytime I learn, whether it's something that I research and sort of discover on my own, or whether it's research of other people's points that they've made that I take in, it's very important to me to test it, to argue it, to and so I have spent, as people who know me in this way know, that I've spent a tremendous amount of time arguing basically with anyone that will argue with me, because I think that's the thing to do. And this argument takes place on discussion forums and emails, and so I have made it a mission to take every single point, everything, and try to get anything that will refute it, and many points that that I at one time or another thought maybe were smoking guns or were great evidence turned out to not hold up, and they get abandoned and they get thrown out. But what remains in my paper, I think, is very, very robust. These are 22 points that I have vigorously sought explanation, you know, alternative explanations other than video compositing, and they're just simply, they stand up. They haven't been refuted, and I present the counter-arguments, I think, very well. I think I do a good job of representing the other side and the counterclaims that have been made. And when you look at the whole thing, there are any number of points which strictly rule out real airplanes, just rule it out completely. And then there are a number of other points which don't strictly rule it out, but make it extremely astronomically unlikely. So I think when we start up on after the next break, we can start going through what I think what I know are the good points that prove video fakery. And I also want to spend some time today talking about a lot of research and claims that are out there from the no-planers crowd that are false, that are wrong, that serve to, I think, undermine the scientific case for video compositing and for no planes. So hopefully we'll have a chance to get into some of that today also.
Perfect, Ace. And I might point out that among your other views, I mean, when you mentioned 22 data points, just one of those data points, the very first, is that there are 9 features of composition that are found in the videos. I mean, that's not 9 points, that's just 1 point, a very important one with which you begin your analysis.
That's right, and there's really only 2 out of all the many airplane videos of that second airplane hit, only 2 of them were confirmed to have been shown live in real time. That's another important distinction that needs to be made, is the difference in capabilities of what you can do live in real time as far as video fakery versus what can be done if you have editing time. And the ability to composite in real time requires specific features that we'll talk about in the next segment.
Perfect. Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest today, Ace Baker.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Change my mind, I'll open up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, help me?
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Ace Baker, is a musician, composer, and expert on digital processing, and is perhaps the leading expert on video fakery on 9/11 and related issues. Ace, where would you like to begin?
Well, we had started talking about the 9 extraordinary compositional features of both of the 2 live 9/11 airplane videos. This is so-called Chopper 5 and Chopper 7, and they're compositionally basically identical. Both of them have a very brief appearance and disappearance of the plane, less than a second and a half of the plane actually appearing on the screen. In both cases, there's very high contrast between the sky and the edge of the tower. In both cases, the plane goes across the sky only. In both cases, the plane disappears across a straight vertical edge. All surfaces requiring airplane shadows are hidden. The actual impact wall is hidden. The camera is gyroscopically stabilized. The helicopter is as motionless as possible, drifting very slowly to the left. And there's no panning, no tilting, no zooming, and no focusing while the airplane is on the screen. As it turns out, those are the very features that are required for a live airplane composite to take place. If you take away any one of those 9 things, any one of them, doing a realistic composite such as what we saw would become impossible. But given all 9 of those, it's actually doable. It's actually pretty straightforward. It can be done. For example, the high contrast between the sky and the edge of the tower. Well, both of those helicopters were on the shady side of the towers, looking into a really bright sky. And the way this composite is done, the illusion of making the airplane pass behind the tower requires that you are able to separate out the sky from the tower. And as long as one of them is very bright and the other one is very dark, it's easy to do that. But if you were on the other side of the tower, on the sunny side, there would not be that high contrast. And then trying to do what's called pull a key or do luminance keying, which is the method by which the airplane or by which the sky and the tower are separated out, that would become impossible. It becomes a mess. I mean, it can't be done. So you go down that list that I just read, and each one of them is exactly what's required. So, I wonder what the odds are that all of those compositional features happened just by chance. And it just seems to be astronomically unlikely that they would happen by chance.
So just in terms of the mechanics, where would this be taking place, the compositing actually taking place physically?
It could happen back at the TV studio. The signal from a news chopper is relayed by microwave up to a satellite and then down to the TV studio. So they could have an Avid system. Avid is the name of a company that makes video processing systems that do live compositing, and was around in 2001 and before, and is most likely the type of system that was used. But I'd be willing to bet it was actually on board the chopper. Certainly no physical reason why that couldn't be. And as it turns out, the guy that was in Chopper 5 running the camera is a guy called Kai Simonson. And Kai Simonson, besides being a reporter and a cameraman for WNYW-TV, is also a video compositing expert and was advertising his services and his studio in 2001, where he had a green screen room and an Avid system. And so he was definitely very knowledgeable about that whole thing. So I would think they would actually put the composite together right there on board the helicopter and then put that signal up on the microwave to be relayed back down to the studio so that the people in the studio who receive the signal, it already has an airplane in it, and the absolute minimum number of people actually see the raw footage with no airplane in it. That seems like the sneaky way to do it.
That's completely fascinating. I might draw a parallel. When I organized a research group to study the death of JFK, one of the best members of my research group is a fellow who's got both a PhD in physics and an MD and is board certified in radiation oncology, which, of course, is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy. He has made many trips into the National Archives to study the original X-rays. But he, right off the bat, detected what he had suspected, to wit that they had altered the X-ray of the cranium to conceal a massive blowout to the back of the head by imposing a patch. But using a simple technique from physics, optical densitometry, he was able to determine that the patch was a material much too dense to be human bone. Now, not only did he have this unique background, this combination of physics and radiology and medicine to detect it, but it turns out that the officer was in charge of radiology that night. He was acting. He wasn't the regular officer there. A fellow named John Ebersol just also happened to have a specialty in radiation oncology. So I think this is one of those cases where you have to have the right kind of technical background and expertise to detect fakery by persons who have a similar background and expertise.
Right. That makes sense. You know, and again, you know, it could be just a coincidence that just happened to be the guy who wasn't scheduled to be there but happened to get called in. But then you just start wondering what are the odds. And there's all over 9/11, not just with the videos, but all over. There's all these things where if you want to believe the official story, you just have to start saying, you know, what are the odds? You know, what are the odds? FEMA just happened to be planning a bioterror drill in Lower Manhattan, and they just happened to be town the night before. You know,
and the Secret Service agent who was in charge of the presidential limousine when Jack was whacked just happened to be the same Secret Service agent who collected the X-rays, which had been exposed and developed, and the autopsy photographs, which had been exposed but not developed, before the physicians who were in charge of the autopsy were able to draft their autopsy report. And the next time we have any access to them, they've been altered and faked in a variety of ways.
Who do you think? And I've heard that the driver of the limo actually turned around and whacked JFK. I've heard that there was a manhole cover right there on the street, and that the angle of the shot indicates that it might have come from down below, up at an angle.
No, there were six firing shot locations, but none of them appear to have been the two that you described there, although they're widely discussed among researchers. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Ace Baker. We'll be right back. This is is Jim Tepfer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Ace Baker, and I are discussing research he's done, including some 22 data points he has to support his conclusion that the videos shown live on 9/11, and Ace has emphasized there were actually only two of those, were subjected to video compositing, probably just prior to their broadcast, or even more or less continuous with it. Is that right, Ace?
Right. It's not just there. I mean, it's all of the airplane videos must be video composites. But by studying both the live ones and the edited ones and testing both the video composite hypothesis and the real airplane hypothesis, I found that all 22 of these data points either rule out the real airplane or strongly work against the real airplane.
Well, I think it's completely fascinating that the cameraman who was on Chopper 5 just happens to be an expert on video compositing.
You know, I've seen an archive of a posting on a forum that he did where he was advertising his studio, his helicopter video services and his green screen room and his Avid system. So he's much more than just a reporter, that's for sure. In fact, his experience at owning and running this digital video services company goes back into the early 90s, whereas he only got his gig as a reporter on Fox 5 later than that, years after that. So
it makes you wonder what kind of purpose, you know, what kind of clients does he have as a rule? I mean, obviously 9/11 presented a special case. What would be the typical kind of use for video compositing in the normal run of events?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, anything. There's video compositing is all over the place. You know, probably one of the most common things that you see is in green screen where the actor is actually shot standing in front of either a blue screen or a green screen. Then it makes it very easy to remove that background and put that person into any kind of a scene or any kind of a background that you want. People use it in commercials all the time. It's much more expensive to go to the top of Mount Everest or inside of a volcano or onto the surface of a foreign planet or anywhere else than it is to just shoot them in the green screen and then get the background from somewhere else and put the two together. You see it every night on the news, of course, when they do the weather. They're not actually standing in front of that skyline or that weather map. They're actually standing in front of a brightly lit green screen. And anything from A to Z, you know.
If anyone wanted to fake or frame, I mean, that's part of what's going on 9/11, but if they wanted to fake or frame someone they didn't like, maybe somebody, you know, wanted a divorce from their wife, they could arrange for this guy to create fake video that might show her visiting someone at an odd time of the evening, for example, as kind of prima facie evidence of infidelity.
That's really going to be the whole point, and that's going to be the final point in my movie, which I'm still working on, and that is that, and we all know when we watch movies or TV shows that we know not to believe it, because we know there's been special effects for a long, long time, and they just keep getting better and better and more realistic looking. But what people still haven't put together yet is that your news department has exactly the same kind of capabilities, and that the government actually runs the mainstream news, and there's just no doubt that they would use this kind of a weapon to further their own agenda. Why wouldn't they? They use nuclear weapons when they want to, and they use, you know, whatever kinds of bombs and missiles that they need to achieve their military objectives. Why wouldn't they use video fakery to achieve their information objectives? You know, somebody just posted some videos from the Gulf War, the first Gulf War back in the early 90s. Was it 91, I think, when that was going on? And this is really put – CNN was very famous because they had guys over there. I've looked at these – there was a reporter named Charles Jaco, I think his name was, doing a lot of live reports from Saudi Arabia and from Iraq. And It's absolutely a green screen. It's in a studio and it's fake, and they're pretending they're outside and they're putting on gas masks and they're pretending there's incoming missiles and ducking and doing all sorts of stuff. And there's been some footage that surfaced where they're sitting around and that you can see that it's fake plants and you can see that it's a green screen backdrop and it's and this is going back to 91.
This brings to mind that the Pentagon regards this kind of information manipulation as part and parcel of its efforts to preserve, protect, and defend the United States. I mean, I think they're very unscrupulous here in the sense of being willing to fake all kinds of stuff. So
right. Now, however, I think that one big difference between military hardware, you know, weapons, missiles, guns, bombs, et cetera, and computer technology and video technology is that there's no law against possessing state-of-the-art video equipment, whereas there is, you know, I can't build my own nuke or my own Stinger missile or something like that.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think it's reasonable to assume that I can know what the state-of-the-art in terms of video manipulation is in 2001 and here in 2008. I think it's reasonable to know. I do not believe that the government has advanced video technology superior to what Hollywood has and superior to what I know about. Now, I don't know that I can prove that and prove this negative, but I certainly haven't seen any evidence of it in there. There are certainly people working very, very hard to try to convince 9/11 researchers that something highly advanced in terms of video fakery was going on 9/11, and trying to convince us that they were completely assembling digital landscapes and completely 3D animated scenes, which is, as far as we know, is not possible just yet.
Well, here the principle known as Occam's razor, which says that you want to prefer the simplest theory that explains all the available evidence, would click in, because what you're talking about then is an explanation that's more elaborate than it needs to be, and which could not be justified on the basis of technology known to exist, whereas your account is based upon technology known to exist and appears to account for all the evidence without indulging in these additional possibilities for advanced technology.
That's right. And the evidence offered for this total animation, or they're actually calling it layering, which is a very sneaky use, because, you know, actual compositing involves layering, so it's actually a bad choice to name it that. But the people who are advancing that have evidences that they've been putting forward of moving bridges and missing buildings and moving buildings and missing backdrops, missing skylines, things like that. And I've looked at all of these over and over and argued with these people, and there's just no evidence. There are interesting shots, but perspective does interesting things. I know I talked about that a little bit last time when Mark from Pennsylvania, Marcus Allen, called in. And there's just not only does that technology not exist, but there's really no evidence to think that we have to even explain with it.
Mind you, I think anyone, I admire anyone who has the courage and integrity to tackle these controversial issues, because God knows most members of the 9/11 community don't know what to do with them. They're afraid of them and have a very strange attitude, it seems to me, about wanting to repress the research that can only eventually lead to understanding what actually happened on 9/11. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest Ace Baker. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Last night on the way to paperback was on my
is Jim Spencer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Ace Baker, is an expert on digital processing and on video fakery, and we're discussing his research in relation to the videos that were broadcast on and after 9/11 purporting to show planes hitting the Twin Towers. Ace.
How you doing, Jim?
Good, real good. Real pleasure to have you on today.
Yeah, and again, you know, for anybody that missed it, boy, the last Dynamic Duo.
Well, Morgan will be subbing for me next week.
Oh, well,
Kevin's reruns from here on out, you know, and we'll, the last broadcast will be on the 21st.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, you know, so I'll try to step through these 22 points. So some of them I'll just, like, skip through quickly, and I'll hit some of the most important ones.
Sure.
Down the memory hole, there were a number of points about Chopper 5. Chopper 5 is the one they'd like to have back. They screwed that up. I think Kai Simons had messed up. And so, you know, they flushed it down the memory hole when they made their archives. They replaced that footage with completely different footage and kept the same voiceover. That's suspicious. Slowly drifting left, you know, this, again, as I mentioned before, to try to do a live composite, you've got to have that camera holding still and stable. And, you know, they're 4.5 miles from this news story, and instead of flying towards it and trying to get closer, they stop and just start drifting slowly to the left. And that just doesn't really make any sense as far as a real airplane. And then, but those are just sort of unlikely. But when we get to no plane in the wide shot, we have something which proves no plane with certainty. There's the Chopper 5 shot opens up with this big wide shot, and we know through three different proofs that the airplane would be in that wide shot for over 5 continuous seconds. That's over 340 actual individual images, and I have both scaling a model of an airplane and blurring it and pixelating it into that shot at the right scale. I can tell that the plane would be large enough to appear. I've done test footage, a control case, where I videotaped a similar airplane from a greater distance under very similar circumstances into that bright sky, silhouette against a bright sky, and the airplane appears. So a real airplane with certainty would appear in that wide shot. It's not there. There's just no airplane there. And then, of course, the miracle zoom, where when the camera finally does zoom in, the airplane enters the picture within just one video frame, which would just be an extraordinary coincidence for that to occur. But under compositing, you can't composite onto a zooming shot. Not in real time, you can't. So finishing all zooming before that image comes in is a practical necessity for video compositing. And, of course, the most famous blooper in the history of 9/11 is Pinocchio's nose. They accidentally let the darn nose of the airplane image slip out of the backside of the layer mask. And it is whatever it is that comes out of there is absolutely indistinguishable from the nose of an airplane. And I've gone through all of the explanations we've heard that it could be an engine, it could be the nose of the airplane. That's what Kai Simonson says. It could be a landing gear, it could be a dust explosion, and I go through and I explain how none of those things add up. It just doesn't make any kind of sense that any of those things could be the size and shape of the nose of a 767 aircraft. And then a fade to black. They, you know, as soon as they realized the nose came out, somebody somewhere dip the picture down to black until they could get the airplane out of there. And that doesn't make any sense either. It's not a signal interruption. It's not any of these other excuses that have been put forward. And then, of course, the unstable motion. It's pretty subtle, but the actual motion of that airplane is measurably unstable, and that would just is much more consistent with trying to do a live composite than it is a real airplane. And then a missing shadow. Doggone it. When you look at other shots that show this nose out event, like the Nowday footage, there's a big dark shadow that goes across the face of that tower, as there would be if it was any kind of a real event, no matter what it was, sticking out of that building. But when you look at the Chopper 5 shot, there's no shadow of that thing. And shadows do not take a day off ever. This, again, is absolutely conclusive proof in and of itself that this is not a real object coming out of the back of that CNN ghost plane. Was not a live shot. This one first emerged many, many hours after 9/11 happened. This was later on in the day. And this is just looks completely fake. The airplane goes right through the wall of that tower like the wall of the tower wasn't even there. And we've got the hole in the side of the building that only appears after, sometime after the plane goes through, but we have the wing of that airplane that passes beyond the wall, and there's still no hole there, so it's just physically impossible. And then one of my favorites, a little thing, but it's so absolutely definitive to prove video fakery, and this is Raj's over under puffball. And this guy, Raj Saiz, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, a Portuguese guy who's come around in the last year or so, noticed that these puffballs, like in the ghost plane video, we have these white puffballs that appear where the engines of that plane go into the building, these white explosions of some kind. And it's underneath the wing, especially the left wing. We notice that the explosion as puffball is definitely underneath the left wing. But then when we compare that to the Evan Fairbanks video, which was taken from down at street level, looking up at a high, sharp angle, clearly and unambiguously, that puffball is above the left wing. And this is just not reconcilable with reality. These puffballs, I think, were added in to try to help cover up the fact that the plane going into the building doesn't show any physics. Nothing breaks, nothing twists, nothing bends, nothing slows down, nothing on the airplane. You see no damage to the airplane at all, ever. You know, and they I'm sure if they just dissolved it right into the side of that building, that just looked so completely fake. So they had to put something in there to cover parts of that up. And so that's what they did. And somebody screwed up a little bit and put that darn puffball above the left wing in the Fairbanks video. And it just doesn't agree. And, it just doesn't agree.
So the puffballs were purely for the sake of obfuscating the details that would otherwise tend to refute the reality of what they're portraying.
I think so, although it's possible that the puffballs are real. It's possible that there was this white-gray kind of explosion at the side of the tower, because the color of it and the behavior of it is a lot like what happens to the entire tower later on when they blow it up. So maybe they used the same kinds of explosives, whatever it was, to create this airplane-shaped hole, including those puffballs and all that stuff. But if that's true, if the puffballs are real, it means that they just, in Fairbanks, they got the positioning of the mask wrong. You draw a shape and say everything inside this area is going to go transparent, so the plane flies into that area, and when it goes into that mask area, it becomes transparent. So if you misplace it a little bit, yep, that puffball could be over the wing instead of under it.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fester, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a musician and composer, an expert in digital processing, a guy who knows an awful lot about an awful lot of issues related to 9/11, Ace Baker. It's such a pleasure to have you on today, Ace.
Good to be back once again, Jim.
I really enjoy this. You're doing so much fascinating research, and I'm very pleased that I'm going to have a chapter from you for the new book I'm editing for Scholars entitled The 9/11 Controversies, because your work is right in the center, right in the bullseye of the most controversial issues confronting 9/11 researchers. Let's continue on with your discussion. We did Pinocchio's nose and, of course, the fade to black, which was, you know, intended to conceal or again, at least not allow the attention to dwell on the fact that the penetration had taken place all the way through the building inadvertently, and we suddenly were confronted with an intact nose of a Boeing 767 that had come all the way through the building.
And Chopper 5 wasn't the only video to have a blackout problem. CNN Live was showing a version of the Chopper 7 footage, and they, too, had about a one-sixth of a second of black right within a quarter of a second at the same time that Chopper 5 had their blackout. And, again, I would point out that this black screen cannot be a signal interruption. When signals get interrupted all the time, and they can do different things depending on whether it's analog or digital, but a black screen is a picture. It's not the loss of a picture. Black is a picture just like any other picture. And then also a third video, the Nowday documentary, which of course wasn't shown live, but when it finally came out on DVD, they captured the second hit also, and there's a very brief amount of time edited out of their video that's the exact same part piece of time that goes black in Chopper 5 and then went black on CNN. And so, you know, I would wonder why would they edit out like about 1 second of video, very dramatic video, why would they edit that out? And it's the exact piece of time that would show the fate of Pinocchio's nose. It would show what happens to this thing, whether it's the nose or in the Nowday video, it looks like dust. They made it look like a dust explosion. But we want to know what actually happened to it. And so it's just astronomically unlikely that two television networks plus a documentary film would all have random problems with losing picture for one reason or another, all within a quarter of a second of each other. So,
and the durations of the fade to black were the same time, too?
Well, they're not exactly identical. The occurrence on all three is within a quarter of a second of one another. The duration on Chopper 5, I think, is like about a half a second. I think it's about 14 or 15 frames of video. The CNN is like a sixth of a second. In the Nowday, we don't know. You can guess based on the fireball that it was approximately 1 second of time that was taken out, but they don't have an actual blackout. It's just an edit where there's an unknown amount of time missing, but it's about 1 second that's missing. And I think the idea, once Chopper 5 happened, they had to try to explain, first of all, what this object might be that's coming out of the back of there, and then, more importantly, what happened to it. Because if it's an engine, well, we've got to find an engine on the street. They weren't ready for that. So in one video called the Gamma Press video, which shows this nose out, it looks quite, although it's from the opposite angle, it looks quite a bit like the nose out in Chopper 5. It looks like a fuselage or the nose of an airplane or something. It's the right size for that. But it shows it actually bursting into flames and disappearing in less than a second. Just push, it's gone. You know, which is very interesting. If it was some heavy object, I mean, what, steel and titanium can't burst into flames and disappear in less than a second, you know. But it's a big problem. So, like in Nowday, if you're going to show that period of time, well, you've got to have a flame that matches that Gamma Press video. It's got to look the same. And I think it was they just said, well, you know, it's way easier. Let's just take a piece of video out, and we won't show it till maybe nobody. It's kind of chaotic camera movement in that nowadays sequence, so maybe they're thinking, well, it's just maybe nobody will notice. I don't know what they were thinking.
Your next data points include unstable motion, the missing shadow, and magically healing columns.
Right, and we talked about those last segment, you know, and you know, the magically healing columns are definitive. The only explanation for the fact that the wing of the airplane in CNN Hezer Khani ghost plane shot is the right wing appears to go in through the wall, and there's a frame of video where the wing is already inside, yet there's no hole in the wall. One explanation that came forward for that was that, well, the resolution of the video is just not good enough. So what I did is I found a subsequent frame of video from the same video, a subsequent frame that actually shows the airplane-shaped hole at the same zoom setting, so the same kind of resolution and picture quality, and you can easily see the hole. So we know that in the frame where the wing is inside the building, if there was a hole there, we could see it. And the other explanation that's come forward is that, well, maybe the airplane made a smaller hole, a hole that's just big enough to fit the airplane, and then the fireball explosion that happened enlarged the hole. And that we have to rule out also, because we're talking about a kerosene explosion, which is two orders of magnitude too weak to possibly cut steel, ever. It's just not, you know, the idea of breaking steel columns with a kerosene explosion is absurd. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, and again, I'm away from my my computer now. I'm driving, so I know there's a number of other.
I could tell. Of course, we've discussed the over-under puffballs. So your next point is that there's no broadcast quality video.
Right, and this, you know, this is just frustrating more than, you know, definitive proof of anything. But ordinarily, you know, broadcast quality video of news events is available to be licensed for a fee from the people who shot it, like in this case, CNN or WNYW or some of these other television stations, and I've contacted them. They won't license this footage. And in the case of the Chopper 5 footage, this has never appeared in any documentary. It's never appeared anywhere, broadcast quality footage of it. So this is highly.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. We're continuing a conversation with Ace Baker on video fakery on 9/11, where he says 22 data points, and we've been discussing, oh, the first dozen or more. The next three, Ace, all concern edits. There's the Nade edit, the Ghost Plane edit, and the Park Foreman edit.
Right. Well, they, you know, we sort of hit on that. In the now day, they cut out the part that would show the fate of Pinocchio's nose. So that there just doesn't seem to be a cinematic reason why they would do that at all. And in Ghost Plane, from the south side of the tower, so we wouldn't see that nose-out event. But in that one, we see the plane go in and the big fireball explosion, but we never really see the hole in the side of the tower forming. In fact, I have not found any video that actually shows that hole forming. The Ghost Plane video is edited to where after this explosion happens for a little while, then there's a cut, and then we've got this big hole in the tower. But there's, I don't know, how much time is missing out of there? I don't know. You know, there's no way to know. But I would very much, very, very much like to see that piece of video that ended up on the cutting room floor there. So, yeah, you know, the edits. You know, geez, I'd really love to see the raw video on this stuff.
Your next points include the fact that there's no sound in the Fairbanks video and that Herzikani won't talk.
Yeah, well, you know, or is there sound in the Fairbanks video? You know, now when they showed it the first time on 9/11 on ABC News, Evan Fairbanks was in the studio talking to Peter Jennings, and there was no sound. And then other times that it was shown, there's no sound on it. And the first story was that, I believe this comes from Fairbanks himself, that he said that he gave or was made to give the video to either the Port Authority in one story or to the FBI in another version of the story. And they returned the tape to him with no sound, or returned him a copy with no sound on it. Then, when Jeff Hill called him up and spoke with Fairbanks, Fairbanks said, actually, that his video had been recorded with sound on it in the first place, which is possible on some cameras, you know, not all cameras, but some cameras, they have actual microphone inputs, and you don't have a microphone hooked up to it, or the trim on the mic is all the way down. You could record with no sound. But then, I mean, when you look at the best version of Fairbanks is in, which DVD is it? I think it's the In Memoriam DVD. And there's great sound in Fairbanks. And there's a big old sound of an incoming jetliner that swooshes, and it shows it crashing, and there's a big kind of crash sound. They got, you know, they got that sound from somewhere, and you know, I don't know, they didn't say, hey, we're putting sound effects in here, so, you know, but obviously they did, because there's no sound in Fairbanks. So you know, we know they're adding sound effects. We know in the Herzikani Ghost Plane video, there's a real interesting little sound bite that they added where when they first showed it, you hear there is sound and you hear people screaming and so forth, but you don't hear Herzikani himself saying anything. But then in the version that came out in the DVD, CNN America Remembers, they added somebody, I guess we're supposed to assume it's Herzikani, saying, oh, my God, a plane just hit the building, you know, and, you know, so we know they're playing around with sound bites also, it's suspicious when you add it all up.
It is indeed. Then, of course, that Herzikani won't talk is the next item on your list.
Why? You know, again, and I gotta tip my hat to Jeff Hill. Again, I have before, but Jeffrey Hill is doing journalism. And that might, you know, sound like not much of a compliment, but it's actually the highest form of compliment that I could give, because we know the actual journalists aren't doing journalism when it comes to 9/11, because, well, they're in on it, so they're not gonna. do any kind of real journalism. And Jeff Hill, bless him, has been spending a lot of time just calling people up and talking to them and asking just the most straight-ahead questions. Like, he called Ezra Khan. He's like, well, where were you standing when you took this shot? No, that seems like a perfectly interesting question to talk. This is a guy that supposedly shot amateur video of, you know, one of the most famous news events of the history of the world, and got the best shot, the most clearest shot. And instead of Ezra Khan saying, oh, I was in Battery Park, or I was out on a ferry boat, or whatever, he says he can't discuss it. He says his lawyer won't let him talk, and that Hill needs to call CNN. You know, and Jeff's like, well, wait a minute, this is your video. Did you just give it to CNN? Or, I can't discuss it. I can't discuss it. You have to call them, and I'm getting really pissed off at you right now. That's like, why? If there's nothing wrong, then why is his lawyer telling him he can't talk about it? And where's the original video? And why did he give it to CNN? Which, I mean, it'd be cool for them to show it or whatever, but did he just give it to them? You know, here, take, you know, the most famous piece of amateur news video in the history of the world. Here, just take it, and by the way, my lawyer says I can't talk about it. That's just, this just makes no sense at all.
It really doesn't, does it? I mean, you know, most people, when they're involved in a celebrated event like this, are going to be eager to talk about it. It's like the peculiarity that the astronauts who purportedly went to the moon don't want to talk about it either.
Yeah, it is just, you know, really weird. I remember the guy, I don't remember his name, but the guy that shot the Rodney King beating video, another famous amateur video of a very famous news event. They had him on. He was willing to talk about it. He said where he was standing.
If I'd gone to the moon, you couldn't stop me from talking about it. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Ace Baker. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is Ace Baker, and we've been discussing 22 data points he's uncovered, establishing with a great deal of conviction the occurrence of video fakery on 9/11. Ace, we've worked our way down to number 18, Newton rolls in his grave.
Well, that's the physics argument, and that, you know, I think Morgan Reynolds will probably do a great job tearing that up next week. It's basically about the impossible physics that we see in these videos. That is no physics, you know, no slowing, no twisting, no breaking, no bending of these airplanes as they just glide through. You know, there is another point that I have been really focusing on that shows some impossible physics is no wake vortex. We have these big explosions, these fireballs that occur in both of these towers after the airplane comes through, and within about 5 seconds or less after these airplanes come through this airspace, these explosions are filling up that airspace where this took place. And yet, we don't see this rotating air mass, these twin tornadoes that we know are behind the wings of every fixed-wing aircraft. I've had some of these photographs for quite a while, but I recently have found some videos from the Vietnam era where they're dropping napalm and with low-flying airplane dropping napalm on these areas. And, sure enough, this is a very similar kind of explosion to what you saw at 9/11. You have this same kind of curling, swirling tornado kind of pattern in this explosion. And so the only explanation that was offered for why we wouldn't see this effect was that the explosion somehow pushed the vortex out of the way or something. And I think these old Vietnam videos that I found sort of disprove that.
How about the force paradox?
That's my terminology, and it sort of is an extension of the reasoning that's used in understanding the behavior of the Twin Towers. How the official story has it that the little top parts of these towers somehow crushed both themselves and the entire undamaged lower parts of the building into fine powder. And we know that that's absurd because of the rapid collapse, quote-unquote, times would require very low resistance from below, but pulverizing things into fine powder requires very, very high resistance from below. And I believe it was Jared Holmgren who dubbed this contradiction, the resistance paradox, that it requires it to be very high and very low at the same time. Well, in thinking about why these airplane videos are impossible, or in trying to explain why they might be possible, the official theorists have said, well, you multiply the mass of the airplane times its velocity, and it will give you a certain amount of energy that's equivalent to so many tons of TNT or whatever it is. That's basically correct as far as it goes, but that treats the entire mass of the entire airplane as a single connected mass, like a big rock or something. But in explaining why the back part of that airplane doesn't slow down, they say that the airplane is so weakly connected together that it actually behaves more like a liquid or more like disconnected parts. Well, that's possible also, but you see they're trying to have it both ways. In order for the entire mass of the airplane to act with a single force, explosive force, it has to be connected together very solidly, in which case the back part of the airplane would feel that force and it would have to slow down. On the other hand, if it's so weakly connected together that the back part is relieved of its obligation to slow down, well, that's okay, except for then you don't figure the entire mass of that airplane in trying to figure out how much force that it actually exerts. So that's the force paradox.
Very nice. I know one of the most interesting points you're going to discuss is the comparison with the Sandia F-4 test, which I always thought was fantastic.
Well, this is a video from the late 80s where they took an old fighter plane and filled it up with water and bolted it onto a rocket sled and flew it, well, not flew it, but rocketed it, along this, like a train track at a wall at over 500 miles an hour, and they were testing the strength of the wall, I believe, to try to, test the strength of walls that they might use to encase nuclear reactors or something like that. But this plane basically explodes on contact in a radial fashion, out in a circular fashion. Parts of the wings break off and go around that wall, And when it's over, the wall is still there. I mean, the final score is wall 100, plane 0, as Morgan Reynolds would probably put it.
Well, yeah, one of the claims that is made is the reason you don't find any parts of planes, for example, at the Pentagon or especially or say, you know, in Pennsylvania is because it just disintegrates. And of course here you got this fighter jet that's tied down onto rails smashing into this nuclear resistant bunker concrete and it shatters, but they don't show you all the pieces that are scattered everywhere afterwards.
Well, and but it's, you know, what's what doesn't make any sense on 9/11 is the mutual destruction. You've got at the Twin Towers, it supposedly cuts this cartoon cutout shape of itself through the whole, through the wall of the tower, and yet the airplane itself also disintegrates. The F-4 plane does a pretty good job of breaking into very small pieces, but the wall is still there. And so I think on 9/11, I think if an airplane really did crash into a Twin Tower, it would pretty much be like a bug on a windshield. I think that airplane would absolutely show physics. It would, it would break. It would twist, and large, amounts of it might very well disintegrate. But the wall of that tower wouldn't disintegrate, and there'd be, a fireball there at the side of the building. It wouldn't explode on the inside of the building like what we see in those videos. And I just don't think that if you really think about it, study the evidence like that F4 video, what we see on 9/11 just doesn't add up. It doesn't look real. It's not right.
And the last of your 22 points is the detonation flashes as sync pops.
Right.
We'll pick that up right after this break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Ace Baker. On the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Today we're concluding my conversation with Ace Baker, who is my last guest on the Dynamic Duo. As I mentioned at the start of the program, we will be featuring a guest host, Morgan Reynolds, next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and reruns with Kevin Barrett, who's taking in hiatus. So we'll have Kevin reruns on the 14th, the 17th, and the 21st, which will be the last date for the Dynamic Duo. It's been a great privilege hosting this show, and I will reflect on a few of the highlights after I give Ace the opportunity to address this issue about detonation flashes as sync props. In fact, this takes us all the way back to Dave Von Kleist's first DVD about In Plain Sight, Ace, as you well know, where he was emphasizing some non-standard features on the plane and these flashes as they come, as the plane comes into contact with the building.
Right, and so that's what we see. We see it right at the nose of the airplane, this bright flash. And I think that those flashes are very real, and I think they were an essential ingredient in the video compositing that took place. We've all seen the countdown that is at the beginning of every movie or TV show. It says 5, 4, 3, 2. You see the little thing going around, and right on the number 2, There's a bright flash, and there's a beep that lasts for exactly one video frame. And the reason that show producers have put that thing in the beginning of a reel is for synchronization. The audio and video elements of a show are created separately, then they all have to be brought together, and a problem is to understand where in time to place some element, whether it's music or a video effect shot that's being brought in. How do we know exactly where in time this thing goes? And that sync pop at the beginning, if you put your sync pop on your music or on the effect shot, then you can simply line it up with the sync pop on the master, and you immediately and confidently know that it's in the right place and time. Well, doing these 9/11 videos, if they didn't have a flash, how would they know exactly where in time to put that airplane so that it was consistent with all of the other ones that they were going to do? If you had it off by even a frame or two here or there, somebody later on could go back and maybe know some piece of falling debris or some feature in the smoke or something that, and they could point out that the plane was a little bit earlier or a little bit later than it was in some other video. The simplest, easiest way is to have some kind of a very brief flash or event that shows you not only where in time to place that airplane, but also gives you a visual marker to know exactly where the nose of that airplane is supposed to line up with the wall of that tower. Boom, you can put the nose right on that flash, right in time, and you can do it very, very quickly. Exactly what I would do if I were masterminding this thing. I think it's some kind of a detonation flash, some kind of explosive. They had to have it for that reason.
Well, Ace, I got to say, I think your work is as fascinating, as brilliant as it is controversial, and I'm very glad I'm going to have a chapter from you, which I think will be the longest chapter in the book, entitled The 9/11 Controversies. I'm very pleased we're doing this. As I look back over all the time I've spent here on GCN with the dynamic duo, I think there have been two parts of the program that have been most important to me and perhaps to the audience, and one of them has been where you and Killtown and Andrew Johnson, the Web Fairy, Morgan Reynolds, and many others have been discussing these controversial issues about video fakery and planes or no planes at the World Trade Center. It seems to me that's been one of the most important components. The other has been the extensive discussion I've had by featuring many, many times, perhaps 25 or 30, Judy Wood on the show, where she's been able to have the opportunity to go through her website, where we've combined the use of the computer with the radio in what I take to be a novel form, but which, in my opinion, has been extremely successful. And, of course, this has also been a component part of our going through your website, Killtown's website, and others, when I featured you guys discussing your work on video fakery. So I'm especially grateful to you and those I've mentioned, but innumerable others. If you go to the website for 9/11 Scholars and go onto events, you see a very long list of very diverse individuals who have been the guests on this show. Sometimes when Morgan was guest hosting, and I have a special indebtedness to him for doing that, and as I mentioned before, he'll be the guest host next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday while I'm in Washington. Just to explain a few more words about the program, I'm particularly grateful to Brady, to Jared, and to Donovan, who have helped to manage the program in the studio. I'm, of course, enormously grateful to Kevin Barrett, who, when I had the opportunity to do 5 days, but for family reasons preferred to do three, was glad to sign up for Mondays and Fridays. Kevin has been on as many as three different networks at the same time. He's been doing fantastic work. His latest show, his last show here, which has been rebroadcast, featured Jeremy Hammond the first hour and David Ray Griffin the second. We go back, working backwards. I've had Mark Adams, an expert on voting fraud, Shannon Moore, a talk show host from from Alaska. We've been talking about this vote fraud up in Alaska, and it's fascinating what she's had to say. There's so many others. Many of these shows are archived right now on 9/11 Scholars. I want to thank Ted Turner, too, who's been completely professional, in my opinion, in running the network. I might mention, incidentally, that while the dynamic duo is coming to an end, that doesn't necessarily mean that I will not have other programs on other networks. I have some options I'm considering, and if I pursue them, I would they'll be announced on 911scholars.org, where you, I would say, you might want to start checking the weekend after this to see if anything has been resolved about this. Ace, it's been a great, great pleasure having you as my guest. And
thank you very much.
And really, I think you're doing such fascinating work. And again, I reiterate that I think combining the computer visiting websites with discussion on the air has been something that has been an innovation. I don't know of anyone having done it before. So I've been very pleased with it. I'll just mention the names of some of my guests from October for me or for Kevin or for Morgan. Tyson Slocum, Phil Munger, Michelle Goldberg, Timothy Canova, Tim Gatto, Stanley Leibowitz, Andrew Johnson, Razia, David Mackle, Barry Zwicker, Killtown, Richard Hay, Phillips, C.B. Brooklyn, Jack Doubleday, Webster Tarpley, Jesus Huerta de Soto, Mike Billington, Bob Fitrakis, Mike Palasek, Eric Larson, Barbara Honegger, Ellen Brown. I was on the Officer Jack Lamb show, Elias Davidson, Ace Baker, of course, E.J. Doyle, David Macko, Rolf Lindgren, Mitch Altman, Joe Begant, Shannon Moore, Mark Adams again, Jeremy Hammond and David Ray Griffin, as I mentioned before, Joel Hirshhorn and Warren Pease on yesterday's program. As I say, many of them are archived on 911scholars.org under events, and of course you can visit the archives for gcnlive.com. It's been a real privilege to be on the show, to have Kevin as my host, and to have people like Ace and others as my guests. Ace, is there any final words you'd like to add?
Yeah, just really quickly, you know, I give thought to where this is all going. You may not agree, but people want to, you know, what's the final point of 9/11 research? And I say we have to abolish the government. Thank you for letting me know.
Well, as a fitting conclusion to a show dealing with controversial issues, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Thank you all for listening.